Get Till Show, Starcom Radio Network. Earth Day is Saturday. I was there for the first one. Ed, how old are you? Earth Day is the perfect time to take a look at pending environmental cuts and how they will affect not only your health, but more importantly, your children's health. On the Starcom Radio Network. Get Till Show, AM/FM stations all across America on the Starcom Radio Network. I remember the first Earth Day. It was so much fun. I'll tell you what's not fun is the lack of progress in some areas that we've made as a society. Our next guest is a regular at the Huffington Post. Her book is amazing. Our Earth, Our Species, Ourselves, How to Thrive While Creating a Sustainable World. And she's a regular here on Starcom Radio Network. Welcome back, Ellen Moyer. How are you today?
I'm great, Ed. Thanks a lot for having me back.
Gosh, I love it. I love our visits because we always talk so hopefully, no matter how difficult the circumstances, and we're certainly in an interesting moment with Saturday being Earth Day and what's happening in public policy. There are pending environmental cuts, and as we always talk about, it's not even just us in the immediate. We're concerned with the environment's impact on our children's health. Assess where we are and give our listeners a little update.
Well, we've made a lot of progress, actually, since the original Earth Day in 1970 and the major environmental laws that were passed around that time, the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, Safe Drinking Water Act, Endangered Species Act, and other major pieces of legislation. So we have been making some progress, but there has also been some backsliding as people have used their creativity to get around the laws. So there are problems with backsliding, but now we're really facing a major threat from the Trump administration. And if he had his way, Saturday would be Mars Day, because we would have nothing left on this planet, no water, no life. No, I'm exaggerating, and I probably shouldn't do that.
No, no, but it's fine. You know, I want to mention, the other night I'm having a discussion, and here's what was said to me, just on this very issue. Ed, all of this politics, all of the attempt to control the environment is going to fail because the environment is bigger than mankind. Mankind can't hurt the environment. He's not powerful enough. The power of the planet. Now, I said, well, what does that mean? He goes, well, it means earthquakes, floods. The planet will protect itself. It won't protect the humans who abused it, but don't worry about Earth. Earth has had many conflicts with the human race. Earth always wins.
Yeah, nature plays last.
Right.
And
right.
But, you know, I do agree with that completely, but there is all the suffering that happens in the meantime, so we want to reduce the suffering. And a lot of people love life on Earth, you know, and they want to see plants and animals, including humans, thrive and do well. And, you know, when people elected Trump, they were not saying, make my air dirty, make my water dirty, ruin my land with drilling and mining, wipe out our endangered species. No. In fact, 47% of Republicans, this is in a Reuters poll in January of 2017, just a few days before Trump occupied the White House. And 47% of Republicans even said they wish for the EPA to either remain the same or be strengthened or expanded. So, and of course, more than that for Democrats. So people want a clean environment. They don't want their kids dying of respiratory disease or, you know, only getting by with inhalers, things like that. So this is not what people want. But some industries would love for rules to be relaxed because it just makes it easier for them to operate and they have less to worry about. So Trump is doing this for money. He's not doing it for us. And when we cut environmental efforts, we're actually going to create greater costs in the long run. It's like cutting preventive medicine, you know? That's really crazy. Like if you don't
exactly,
have regular checkups and, you know, just catch things early at the doctor's office, you're going to be doing quadruple bypass surgery.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, all this really expensive stuff later on. And the same goes for environmental efforts. I was just reading about one example. I hope I can find it here. Well, it was about the Clean Air Act, where it costs millions of dollars to do some, to take care of some things, to avoid $1 trillion in costs down the road.
In long term, right?
Yeah. So if people fall for this ploy of him saying, "Well, we're just trying to cut the budget and, you know, live within our means." No, because some of these things are going to end up costing us a lot more down the road.
If you're just joining us, Ellen Moyer is our guest. You read her regularly at the Huffington Post. Her book is amazing, Our Earth, Our Species, Ourselves, How to Thrive While Creating a Sustainable World, which is an Amazon bestseller, number one hot new release in three categories. And she is the principal of Green Environment LLC. You can go to her website, www.ellenmoyerphd.com. As an environmental expert, and we hold you in high esteem here, what's your best surmise as to why we haven't been able to get on the same page with the environment and business in the following way? If we really are destroying and compromising health and resources, that isn't smart for business because they won't have future revenue after all the devastation. On the other hand, their pushback has been, you know, a reasonable regulation is one thing, but the way we've been regulated, I saw an anecdote the other day, I think it was on C-SPAN or someone who was kind of bearing witness, that in a small one-person husband and wife business, the guy held up to the camera, "Look at the size of the regulations that apply to me." And he says, "I've got 1,000 pages, and my wife and I do the books on this business. The two of us couldn't read this thing if we wanted to." He goes, it doesn't work. So he wasn't against being regulated, but he resented the volume of stuff that was thrown at him, and he was, held liable for. So it seems to me, both sides are not mutually exclusive. business needs healthy customers. Healthy customers, you know, want a safe environment, but it's hard to square the circle, I think, is the new expression we're all using. What's your surmise on that?
Well, first I would want to ask, was he talking about regulations in general? I can't believe he was
talking EPA. About no, he's talking EPA.
Environmental.
Yeah, he said EPA. This is my book from EPA. He said, you know, look at the size. And, I looked at it. The thing was as big as his hand. I think it was about 4 or 5 inches thick. And, you know, these were people who respect the environment. They were not anti-environment, but they were anti that Department of Motor Vehicles kind of monolithic, everything's a form, everything's paperwork, did you call? And, you know, I felt for him because he was on our side. He wanted clean air, and he didn't want to be a polluter, and he didn't want to run afoul of government policy. So, you know, my thing is, these two sides here still haven't met. They still, you know, they're reaching toward each other sometimes. Sometimes I know they're opposites, right, and they don't want to even hear the other side. But when they're sincere, they're trying to come together. What's your feeling about why we haven't yet made that solid connection?
Yeah, well, that is horrible if he has all those regulations, but I'd want to know what is he trying to do, like build a nuclear reactor or something, and then I would want all those regulations. So I don't run into myself any environmental regulations in my business of doing environmental work. So I don't know what business he was in. I think that would be important, wouldn't it?
He was off in the woods. I forget when he was there. It was a panel, and when they came to him. But, I mean, you know, in a flannel shirt, you know, and the wife, and you know what I mean? They just look like real salt-of-the-earth people. And I wanted to make sure I mentioned this to you because we do want to connect with those folks. We want to enlist their participation. We want their enthusiastic, you know, compliance, not this reluctant, oh, the bad guys are coming to tell me what I did wrong. And I'm just thinking, you know, I'm trying to think of how old I might have been, 15 or 16 years old on the first Earth Day. What year was the first Earth Day?
1970.
Oh, okay, so I was 14. But I do remember that it was a very exciting day. It really was, wow, this is a huge recognition of something that's long overdue. And I think we need to get these two sides together. Do you see areas where we can improve?
Certainly, yes. And, you know, if we do a good job of protecting the environment, it really stimulates the economy. And the reverse is also true. Like, just look at lead in kids. You know, I was making the point that the cuts to environmental regulations really hurt our kids the most, and there's several articles out there about that. But if we don't protect kids from lead, for example, it wrecks their lives because it can lead to learning and cognitive problems, but it also puts a strain on social services, on health care, and the economy, and they have lower lifetime earnings, and so therefore they pay less taxes. They're also more likely to commit crimes and end up in the whole criminal justice industry, I'll call it, which is really expensive. So, you know, there is a lot to gain by sensible regulations. And, you know, I do agree that people should not be hopelessly entangled in bureaucratic red tape. But if they're trying to do something that is inherently harmful, such as, you know, blowing up a mountaintop to get at the coal and just throwing everything into the streams, well, yeah, they're going to be dealing with 1,000 pages of regulations.
Right.
And rightly so, you know.
Now, lead, you just mentioned, and of course you and I have talked about that and that horrible situation in Flint, which is still unresolved. That they don't have that under control fully yet. But I wondered if you caught a couple of days ago, very troubling, that 1 in 20... New York City elementary school faucets are putting out elevated lead.
Yeah, Brooklyn school
has really become the poster child, where it's worse in Brooklyn, higher levels than even in Flint. Now, you know, this really is, I don't know, it kind of reminds me of the lead paint thing. If we really start going to look for this, we're going to find it everywhere. Should technology be the answer here? This is a very troubling finding.
Well, yeah, we need to get lead out of the infrastructure, and part of what is probably going to suffer is water infrastructure improvements and safe drinking water programs. And so there's going to be less sampling, and there's going to be more exposure of kids to lead. That's just the way it works. So if we are not having inspectors out there testing for things and figuring out what's going on, then our laws are just nice words in a book on a shelf and nothing more than that. We also end up with a patchwork of regulations on the state and local level, and states and localities are really averse to enforcing these laws because they're afraid that businesses will just move out of their state to a state that has laxer laws. So it's just things degrade fast when there's not a strong federal presence there at the EPA. Plus, EPA gives a lot of grants to cities and states and other more local entities to undertake projects, and then those will suffer too. So, you know, we've really come a long way since the beginning. But this really threatens to go in the opposite direction, and it goes in direct, it's directly contrary to what people want.
Ellen Moyer is our guest on the Ed Till Show, Starcom Radio Network, AM/FM stations all across America. As I've mentioned a couple of times, the book is called Our Earth, Our Species, Ourselves, How to Thrive While Creating a Sustainable World. So that your book is kind of like positioned for all of these great controversies. What is something that would make us thrive while getting lead out? And if lead is, from the last couple of indications, as widespread as it is, are we going to wind up just federalizing all of these local water sources? And that's the way, because if a town can't afford to do it, they may want to do it, they may see the danger, but they're helpless if they don't have the money. What do you think? How do we thrive while getting rid of lead?
Thriving while creating a sustainable world was more of an overarching idea, and that's interesting to think about how that would apply to a specific problem like this. I guess what we do is create jobs by paying people to go and take the samples and analyze them and take the lead pipes out and the lead soldering that connects different parts of the water systems and install more benign materials. And it would require more of a long-term approach because the payback is not going to be instantaneous. You know, we're going to have safer water for children, and they're certainly going to thrive while they drink healthy water instead of being damaged, sometimes for life. And we can actually create economic activity by undertaking things like this. When you look back at history, you know, when, and I'm not, I hate war, okay, so I'm not saying war is a good thing, but when we decided to get involved in World War II, we got very busy making weapons and deploying weapons and going to war. There was no client paying us.
right.
to do this.
Right.
We just decided to do it, and we created an economic boom when we did that. And that's how this works. We can just decide to do things, and just by us doing things, we're creating jobs. The people who do the jobs, they have more money to pay taxes with and to buy products with, and it just kind of snowballs from there. So we can do the same thing with our situation now. We can put people to work fixing some of these problems like the lead paint and expanding renewable energy like rooftop solar, for example, and not only help people thrive by having nice jobs where they're actually doing something constructive to help, but just creating activity.
Right.
It seems funny, doesn't it? Because and there are a lot of examples of this happening. You know, after the Great Depression, all the programs that were put into place, WPA, Work Progress Administration.
You got it. All right.
Whoa.
Jeopardy for 20. Very good.
All right. Well, you know, a lot of those programs were put into place, and people got busy, and then they, you know, improved the economy. So it's time for us to do it again, and we've kind of lost our mojo, you know?
Yeah, you know, I want to amplify this and run something by you, see if you agree, because this will be controversial, what I'm going to say. This is not going to be popular in the break lounge. I have been, and I'm 60, okay, so I've been around. I told you before, I was 14 in 1970, so I've watched a lot of this. It really broke my heart that the great inventions of this current generation were Facebook and clicking and phones. It breaks my heart that the geniuses that Harvard turns out in 2004 just wanted to make a web page for people to get together, and now he's one of the biggest billionaires in the world, and every day he's got artificial intelligence, and he's got this. But why do you think the greatest minds don't go after these things, but they go after billions of dollars in revenue off of mindless clicking? Hasn't there been a little bit abandonment by the best and the brightest? They left the people behind, or did they do what business does? Earlier we talked about, you know, you got a business over here and you have the environmentalists over there. Business goes on urges, you know, impulse spending, and they're satisfied. Let me get my revenue. Did I get the money? Okay, I'm done for the day. You take both of these things, you know, business being craven for revenue, and then you take the brightest people succumbing to that. Well, then how will we ever break these cycles if we don't have an Einstein in our generation that wants to make the world better and not just become a teenage billionaire?
Yeah, and you bring up such a great point, because we also need to grow ourselves and stop being so small-minded and short-sighted. I think the phenomena you describe are people are lured by money, and they're just thinking of the next paycheck or the next year, or you know, they're not actually sitting down and saying, okay, what is really important to me? Is it the new shiny car really, or is it a healthy world for my kids? You know, what actually do I care about? We seem to be kind of desperate, it seems to me, you know, just kind of grabbing for the nearest thing, like we're just insecure, thinking, oh, well, I could never do something I really believe in. I better just grab this good-paying opportunity and just, you know, put in my time and suffer during my career, and then when I retire, then I can have fun and hopefully be okay. So it's we need to develop ourselves, I think, to figure out what we really want, And also reach higher.
Oh, boy, you took the words right out of my mouth. We got to raise our game. We got to raise our
definitely.
Sights.
I remember. Up our game and, you know, upgrade our whole existence and not live out of fear.
I love the quote from John Kennedy when he's talking about the moonshot. He lists a couple of great things, and the moonshot is the last one. He says, we do these things not because they're easy, because they are hard. We should be looking for difficult. We should be looking for impenetrables. We should be looking at where failure has been the track record. And today, we're going to get over that hill. This is what I don't hear in oratory or in, you know, I don't, you know, forget it about oratory. I know that's changed, right, since that era. But at least I would like to feel the conscience, and it seems like it's being drowned out. You know, with who's hooking up with who and who's got, you know, take a look at my new motorcycle. Here's where I climbed over the weekend. Here's what I did. And it's I, and we've lost our we.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I think we could have a lot more fun if we got beyond that and got beyond, you know, just thinking about this fiscal year and this election cycle. And, you know, we really, this is going to sound kind of woo-woo, okay, but I don't think we have enough love for other living things and ourselves and other people. You know, if we did, we would do things that are hard. And, you know, we just kind of devolved into this these small people living in small worlds, you know.
Ellen, we are so lucky to have you. You know, it's not easy to find a guest that has the insight and has the ability to share like you do with us a big picture, because we've lost it. I thank you so much. I love your book, and I've already given it to a colleague here in the building. We need so much more of what you do. Thank you for the writing. Thank you for joining us every time you do, because you represent a direction that I think many of us have just gone astray. We got to get back to it. It's a great song, Woodstock. We got to get back to what we're all about. You know, we got to get back to who we are. We got to get back to the land. Oh, man, I love having you on the show. Thank you for visiting today.
Thank you, Ed. I appreciate it so much.
Same here. The time goes by so quickly. I cannot wait till our next conversation, but today was awesome. And what will you do on Earth Day? What does Ellen Moyer do on Earth Day?
Well, I'm actually going to the Amherst Sustainability Festival, where I'll have a booth in Amherst, Mass. On the town common. I'll be selling my book.
Awesome.
And talking to people about it.
That is so perfect.
Looking forward to it.
The Amherst Sustainability, what's the third word?
Festival.
Festival. All right, well then, we're going to vibe you all weekend, that everybody gets your book and everybody has a moment with you, and you're so generous with your time with us. Have a great day.
Oh, thanks, Ed.